We're going to continue our discussion of cells, since biotechnology uses cells so much in the modern sense of biotechnology. Just about all the stuff that's done in modern biotechnology uses cells somehow. And specifically, it uses DNA in the cells. We've already talked about DNA quite a bit. But the reason that biotechnology is successful as far as DNA manipulation is concerned, in other words, the reason that we can design a single DNA molecule with a specific gene that we're interested in, or a plasmid, which is a DNA molecule also, the reason that works for us is because we can exploit cells to actually work as DNA factories to produce millions of copies of that DNA for us. Because they do this naturally. Cells naturally produce DNA whenever they are about to divide into two new cells, like we've talked about before. So, today I'm starting a slideshow that is actually two lectures long, but it's all in one slideshow. But if you notice your syllabus, it says today we're going to do mitosis, and then on Monday meiosis. Those will be the last two lectures for this unit. And so I'm only going partway through this. But mitosis and meiosis, which are the main two main parts of this slideshow, are both cell division processes. Cells come from pre-existing cells nowadays. That notion is called the cell theory. So it's no longer the case that cells just pop into existence, like they did originally, basically, in the early conditions on Earth. Conditions were a hell of a lot different than they are now. Very much hotter. The oceans were entirely different, and so on. It was a place we wouldn't recognize nowadays. But the conditions were correct in those early, and I talked about this in here, right, about how life came to be.
No.
Okay, maybe I didn't. Anyway, original cells came to be because of the chemistry of the Earth as it existed a long time ago. And all cells have come from those original cells, which is why all organisms are related. Cells are able to produce new cells by splitting into two. And so that's what the cell theory says. All cells come from pre-existing cells. All right, well, cells are little bags of chemistry, basically. But cells, in order to perform that chemistry, need proteins. And you can't make proteins unless you have instructions for how to make those proteins, and that's what DNA is. We've talked about this several times. Okay, so if a cell is going to make two new cells by splitting, then it needs to be able to copy its DNA to do that. Which is why one of the two major functions of DNA is self-replication. All right, well, this splitting of a cell into two happens different ways for different organisms. But remember, what seems like a long time ago now, we divided all organisms into three major groups called domains. Anyone remember what those domains are?
Prokaryotes, eukaryotes, and
bacteriophage? No, bacteriophages are viruses, so they're not organisms. I agree with you on eukaryotes. The domain name is eukarya. There is no prokarya, though. The prokaryotes of the world, which are everything that isn't a eukaryote, those are divided into two domains of their own, which are
bacteria, archaea, eukarya.
Yeah, the two prokaryotic domains are bacteria and archaea. And they split into two new cells as well, mostly by a process that's called binary fission. Fission simply means splitting in two, or splitting. Binary means into two. Well, that's not what we're talking about today. We're talking about eukaryotes. So any member of eukarya, the domain eukarya, which includes us, not only us, but all animals. We're just one animal. It also includes plants, fungi, and all the protists. All these kinds of cells, these eukaryotic cells, undergo either mitosis or meiosis to produce two new cells. And that's what, when I'm talking about cell division in this lecture, I'm really talking about eukaryotic cell division. So it's either mitosis or meiosis. But cell division in general has these three major functions in slide one: reproduction, growth and development, tissue renewal. Now, reproduction here can mean reproduction of an entire organism. If you happen to be a unicellular organism, your entire body is just one cell, right? And therefore, you reproduce, you have offspring, by simply splitting into two cells. So cell division causes new organisms when we're talking about unicellular organisms. By the way, notice that that kind of reproduction is different from how we multicellular animals do it. For us, a woman gets pregnant. If she successfully carries to term, she has a new human. She produces a new human, but she's still around. She still exists, right? A unicellular organism, once it splits, the original one no longer exists, really. It's two offspring. The parent is gone, right? The parent is really produced both of those by being used up in the process. But anyway, cell division clearly can be used for reproduction of unicellular organisms. It's also, though, involved in our own reproduction of multicellular organisms, because we use gametes, which are sex cells that combine in the process of fertilization, like I've talked about before, to produce a zygote, right? The zygote then becomes the new individual. But to produce those gametes requires cell division also. So we have cells in our body, or sexually mature individuals do. They have cells in their body that split into new cells called gametes, sperm or egg, depending on the sex. Okay, growth and development is listed here because we, as huge organisms, compared to most organisms on Earth, which are unicellular, we don't just get huge by having the one cell that we start out as, the zygote, grow into a huge cell, right? There's no human-sized cells anywhere. Cells can't get big indefinitely. And why can't they? Why? We talked about that.
Surface area to volume ratio?
Exactly. If the bigger cells get in all three dimensions, the lower their surface area to volume ratio gets. So eventually they outgrow the ability to exist as a single cell. So we exist as large organisms because our one original cell, the zygote, splits into many cells. In our case, tens of trillions of cells, or roughly 10 trillion cells for an adult. So that's growth. That clearly relies on cell division. And development is related to growth. The difference, of course, is that growth simply means getting bigger. So if all we did were grow from a zygote, then we would be a mass of 10 trillion zygotes. All of our cells would be identical to each other. There wouldn't be different kinds of cells. We would just be a huge blob of identical cells, like a bacterial colony, right? Well, we're not that. We have different kinds of cells that produce different kinds of tissues arranged into different kinds of organs. So that's what development is, the change in the types of cells along the way. The third one is tissue renewal. And this is important when a multicellular organism is injured. First of all, this applies only to multicellular organisms because only multicellular organisms have tissues, right? Remember the hierarchy of biological organization? Everything between cell and organism only applies to multicellular organisms because a cell and an organism is the same thing for a unicellular organism. But things that have tissues, well, they can damage those tissues. We can survive having billions of cells destroyed in our body because we have trillions of cells. So depending on the extent of that injury, we can survive it. But when you cut yourself, for instance, you're destroying millions of cells. Those cells die, but you're not left with a hole in your body for the rest of your life. That hole's filled in, basically. The injury is healed by the fact that the surviving cells in the surrounding area are spurred into action by the injury to start dividing to replace the cells that were lost by the injury. So tissue renewal also relies on cell division. Okay, the big question is, do these cells work? Yeah, they do today. Okay, slide two. What we're looking at here is a micrograph of a cell. And how can I tell that this is a eukaryotic cell? Exactly. It has a nucleus, which is all of the inner stuff here that is darker purple and wider bands of stuff. All this outer stuff collectively is called what? Cytoplasm. All the stuff inside is called the nucleoplasm. But within that nucleoplasm, we have these dark purple strands. And those dark purple strands, well, what would you guess they are? They're DNA. Certainly there's DNA in there. But it's not pure DNA. It's DNA and one other type of macromolecule. What's the only one left? Well, DNA is a nucleic acid. Proteins, yes. So what we have here, these dark purple bands, are complexes of DNA and protein combined in a mixture that we call chromatin. Now, chromatin is just that, a mixture of DNA and proteins. And specific, there's different kinds of proteins, but most of those proteins are called histones. And we talked about histones before, actually, when we looked at DNA and how it's able to be so tightly packed into a cell. Remember that those histone proteins make little hose reel type things that the DNA winds around? Well, that combination of DNA and the histones is chromatin. And chromatin is the stuff that chromosomes are made out of. Now, we've been talking about chromosomes in the last slideshow. in Mendelian genetics, because a chromosome is a single piece of DNA, right? Plus all the proteins that are packed in there as well. And the reason that's important is because a single chromosome contains many different genes, and genes are really what we were studying last time. Well, the genes are in there because they are just subsequences of DNA molecules. But we don't yet call these things you're seeing here chromosomes. This is still chromatin, although it's chromatin that's on its way to being called chromosomes. The big difference is not the stuff that you have, it's the same stuff. It's just that we don't call things chromosomes until the chromatin that makes them up becomes so highly compacted and or condensed, so coiled up, that you actually see individual chromosomes as little bodies within the nucleus. And this is kind of halfway there. So this is a cell that I can not only tell is a eukaryotic cell because of its nucleus, but because of the fact that I don't just see kind of a unicolor interior to this, the fact that it's not just a consistent color with no detail in the nucleus, but instead has these bands that are getting thicker and thicker, this I know is a cell that's about to end its own life, in a sense, in order to produce new cells. In other words, this is a cell that's just about to enter either mitosis or meiosis, depending on what kind of cell it is, to produce two new cells. It's about to enter cell division. All right? But so the chromatin we see here is in the process of condensing. It's in the process of getting more and more compact. Now you can see that it's definitely not all the way there yet, because show me where one chromosome starts and where another one ends. You can't see that yet, right? Not until these things have condensed much further can we actually see individual chromosomes not touching each other. So this is on its way to condensing, but the reason I know that this cell is about to enter cell division is because during the overall, what we call the cell cycle, which is the lifetime of a cell, which you can kind of think of as a pie chart, most of the time spent in the lifetime of a cell is in what is called interphase. And during that time, that cell is busy being whatever kind of cell it is. If it's a liver cell, for instance, a hepatocyte, then it's busy doing what liver cells do. Well, to be a successful liver cell, you have to make the right kind of proteins to do the job of being a liver cell. And the same goes for any other kind of cell. You have to make the specific kind of proteins necessary to do your job. All right, well, how do you get those proteins? By going to the DNA library, which is in the nucleus, and undergoing what process? Transcription first. That'll produce a messenger RNA for you. And then what? Translation will use that messenger RNA to actually produce the protein. So when a cell is busy going about its business, being whatever kind of cell it is, what it's doing is transcribing DNA, transcribing the correct kind of genes that requires to make the proteins that are required for that kind of cell. Now, I mentioned this just a little bit, but both major jobs of DNA, self-replication and transcription, both of those require reading the code that's in the DNA. And therefore, both of them require actually having access to the DNA and splitting the two strands apart. If you're going to read the code on one of those two strands of DNA, It needs to be separated from the other strand. You need to break those hydrogen bonds, in other words. Well, you can only do that if DNA is loose enough. If it's very tightly wound up, very highly condensed, then you can't get at that code. You can't read the genes. And that's why the DNA does not stay in that highly condensed form. It doesn't stay in the form of chromosomes. Instead, it's very much more loose, and it's still chromatin. It's still made out of the same stuff. It's just loose so that it can be accessed by the cell. So during interphase, if this were an interphase cell, you would still see the nucleus, but the nucleus would just have a grayish background. You wouldn't see any detail in it. Okay? Because all that chromatin would be not condensed so that the cell could get to those genes in order to make the proteins necessary. Well, this is a cell later in this cell cycle. It's approaching this little slice right here, which is called the M phase, capital M, or the mitotic phase. And the mitotic phase is when cell division occurs. So a cell condenses its DNA in preparation for dividing. And the reason that it needs to do that is because otherwise, keeping these ridiculously long strands of DNA from tangling, from just becoming a ridiculous tangled mess, when you split the cell and give one half of the replicated DNA to one cell and one half to the other, it wouldn't be possible unless you condense these things into little chromosomes, what we actually call chromosomes by that point. So later on, when you look at the same cell, it'll be more highly condensed in the nucleus. You'll see little individual chromosomes that look like little X's. Okay. That's what we're looking at. Now we can go to slide 3 and look at just one of these chromosomes. This picture, black and white picture on the left, is one chromosome, but it is a replicated chromosome. Now, I didn't say this when I was talking about the cell cycle, but I should now. When a cell is in this early part of interphase, it's not concerned with cell division yet, like young people aren't really concerned with death. It's the end of its own life is far away. So it's just busy doing whatever that kind of cell does. When it gets to about this part on the clock, it starts making preparations for dividing, for approaching the M phase. And hopefully it will make sense to you that if a cell is going to split into two new cells, the first thing it better make sure it does is replicate all of its DNA. Because each of those two daughter cells that it's going to produce needs to have a complete set of DNA. If you think about it in terms of library, you don't give one daughter cell half of the books and the other one the other half of the books, and they're different books, right? You have to give each cell the complete library. Otherwise, each cell won't be able to make half of the proteins. So the only way you can do that is if your library has two copies of each book. And that's why before the cell divides, the DNA has to be replicated. An exact copy has to be made so that temporarily, during this late part of interphase, the cell is going to actually have twice as much DNA as one cell needs. But that makes sense because that one cell is soon going to become two cells, each with just enough DNA for a cell. Okay, well, what I'm trying to say here is that DNA replication occurs up here in interphase, in what is called the S phase of interphase. Interphase itself is broken into three parts, G1, S, and G2. S stands for synthesis, meaning DNA synthesis. So that's when DNA is replicated. All right? It's replicated when it's still loose chromatin, Which makes sense because replication, just like transcription, requires reading that code. So you have to be able to get to it. But then after you've replicated the DNA, basically you've committed yourself to go the rest of the way and actually split into two. Otherwise, why would you replicate the DNA, right? So by the time you get to the M phase, which is when this condensing of the DNA occurs and the actual chromatin is visible as chromosomes, by then you've already replicated it. So this single chromosome that we're looking at in this picture is a single chromosome, but it is a single replicated chromosome, which means it actually has two exact copies hooked together as one unit. Notice that it has a right and a left half. Those right and left halves are identical copies of each other because the DNA has already been replicated. And those identical copies that are connected to each other are called sister chromatids. So chromatids are parts of a chromosome, a replicated chromosome. Even though a chromatid has enough DNA to be a chromosome on its own, and it eventually will be a chromosome on its own, we don't call it a chromosome until it is on its own. When they're still connected to each other, they're called sister chromatids. And both of them together, since they're still connected and therefore overall one piece, we call that one replicated chromosome. And the place on that replicated chromosome where the two sister chromatids are connected, which is right here on this one, it can be anywhere along the length, but it's right here on this one, that place is called the centromere. Okay? So you see the same thing in cartoon form on the right. On the top, which is representing a cell that only has one chromosome, by the way, the number of chromosomes the cell has depends on the species. And so for humans, for instance, there's 23 different kinds of chromosomes. Well, this cell has just one kind, just for simplicity. But however many kinds there are, if it's before the S phase, then there's just one of each of those. And then after the S phase, you have replication occurring. So now this is two exact copies of that same original chromosome, but this is still considered one chromosome because the chromatids are still stuck together. But now this cell is ready to split, not leave, to divide. So it's right here in the cell cycle. And therefore it does split into two cells. The two sister chromatids separate from each other. One goes to one daughter cell, the other one goes to the other daughter cell. And now you have two cells that have just enough DNA for one cell, and they're exactly identical to the original cell. Because DNA replication did not change that DNA, it just made an exact copy. All right? And this is why when you grow up from a zygote, your trillions of cells all have the same DNA, because they all started as one cell that exactly copies its DNA. Except for any mistakes that are made, which are mutations that add up during life. All right. That brings us to slide 4, which is a summary of mitosis, which is the main subject of today. Before I look at the particulars of this, though, let me distinguish between two different kinds of cells in a multicellular organism. We have two major kinds of cells. Those are called somatic cells and germline cells. Now, soma means body, so somatic means of the body. which is kind of a misnomer because, of course, all your cells, even your germline cells, are part of your body. But the reason somatic cells are called that is because by far, most of your body, most of your cells, are somatic cells. And it's even an understatement to say by far. Almost every single cell in your body is somatic cells. So that's what you really are built out of. You find germline cells only in the case of humans, in two small places within your body. Namely, in your left and right gonads. What are the gonads? Testes for a male or ovaries for a female. Exactly. And what are the jobs of those organs? Produce what? To produce gametes, sex cells. Exactly. Well, housed within those gonads are germline cells. Germ here refers to sex cells, okay? But germline cells are not sex cells. That's important to keep in mind here. Germline cells are not actually themselves sex cells. They're not gametes. Germline cells, though, are the cells that, when they split, produce gametes. Okay? And the reason there's a distinction between somatic cells and germline cells is that these two different kinds of cells undergo the two different kinds of cell division that eukaryotic cells undergo. Somatic cells undergo mitosis when they undergo cell division. Germline cells undergo meiosis. Now we'll look at the similarities and differences between mitosis and meiosis in detail next time, when we'll talk about meiosis after having already received background information from mitosis. But right now, what I want you to know as the difference between mitosis and meiosis is that mitosis is cell division that produces two genetically identical copies of the original cell. And therefore, meiosis does not change the ploidy. Now, have I given you the word ploidy yet? Okay, ploidy is a word that refers to how many of each type of chromosome a cell has. Now, I already told you that it depends on the species as to how many types of chromosomes you have. For humans, it's 23 different types of chromosomes. And they're different types because they carry genes for different characteristics. Okay? But in humans, there's 23 different kinds. The ploidy of a human cell depends on whether there's one of each of those kinds or two of each of those kinds. So if a cell has two of each kind of chromosome, then it's a diploid cell. Di means two. Right? And what if it has only one? What is it called?
Haploid.
So diploidy and haploidy are two values of ploidy. Okay? Ploidy just refers to how many of each type a cell has. Yeah? Yes, mitosis takes the parent cell. Well, I shouldn't. Don't. By parent here, I don't mean parent of the individual. I'm talking about the original cell. And when a cell splits into two cells, those cells are called daughter cells. Nothing to do with an actual daughter. They're just called daughter cells. Mitosis uses the original cell, splits it into two daughter cells that are identical to each other, and they're identical to the original cell. Because the DNA is exactly copied.
How old is meiosis?
And well, I'm not quite done with mitosis. The other big thing that I want you to know right now about mitosis is that it does not change the ploidy. So whatever the ploidy is for a cell that undergoes mitosis, it produces two cells with exactly that same ploidy because they're identical to the original one. Now, our somatic cells are diploid cells because we're sexual organisms and we're diploid. Why does being a sexual organism mean that we have diploid cells?
Because we inherit one chromosome from each parent.
Exactly. That's why we have two of every kind of chromosome, because we have two parents. So somatic cells are diploid cells. And when they undergo mitosis to produce more somatic cells, those cells are also diploid because mitosis does not mess with the ploidy. Now, what were you bringing up?
Meiosis.
Okay, now that's where I'm coming to then. Anyway, meiosis, and we'll look at the particulars of meiosis next time. But meiosis is different because meiosis occurs only in the germline cells, not in the somatic cells. And it cuts the ploidy in half. Well, germline cells, which are the cells that undergo meiosis instead of mitosis, they are also diploid cells. But since they undergo meiosis, the daughter cells that they produce are now haploid cells, because the ploidy is cut in half. It goes from diploid, which is two of each, to haploid, which is one of each chromosome. That's how gametes are formed, and that's why gametes are haploid. We already talked about gametes being haploid, right, when we talked about Mendelian genetics. That's why the genotypes for all those sperm and egg were just one of each symbol, whereas the zygotes were two of each symbol. The gametes are haploid cells. The zygotes are diploid cells. Okay. So, mitosis is shown in actual photomicrographs on the top here in slide 4 and also in cartoon form below each picture. The cartoon forms are much more useful to understand this the first time around. But we'll be looking at actual slides of the stuff after I'm done talking. That's the laboratory component today, to look at slides of this stuff. Now, actually, a little bit more than just mitosis is shown here. This first image on the left of this slide is actually not yet in mitosis. Notice that it's labeled G2 of interphase. That's this part of the cell cycle. It's the last part of interphase right before you get to the mitotic phase. Okay? But it's good to have that picture here too so you can compare it to what's happening in early mitosis. So notice that in interphase, in the nucleus, you don't see any detail like I was telling you. And that's because this chromatin is diffuse. It's uncoiled, uncondensed, so that the cell can access all those genes to be able to make the proteins that are required to keep it alive. All right? But since this is G2, meaning since it's already been through the S phase, that means the DNA that's in this nucleus is already replicated. You just don't see any chromosomes yet because condensation or the condensing of the DNA has not occurred yet. Okay, now the rest of it is mitosis, or actually the rest of it is, strictly speaking, the M phase or mitotic phase. The mitotic phase is named for the fact that it includes mitosis. Mitotic is just the adjective of mitosis. But actually, the M phase, if you looked at this in closer detail, I'm drawing just the M phase now, that is broken into two major parts, which are mitosis itself, and then this other last sliver, which is called cytokinesis. All right? So let me explain the difference between these two. A eukaryotic cell, which is what we're talking about, right, has the two major compartments that we just talked about. Has the nucleus, which contains the nucleoplasm, and it contains everything besides the nucleus, outside of the nucleus, which is the cytoplasm, right? A cell that is going to successfully divide into two new cells needs to separate both of those compartments into two new compartments of the same type. Mitosis, specifically, is division of the nucleus and its contents. Whereas cytokinesis is the division of the cytoplasm. Okay? And one of those two processes needs to be a lot more careful than the other process. Which one has to be more careful? No, the cytoplasm one is actually can be less careful. And that's because of what I already said earlier. Both daughter cells have to have the complete library. So the original cell cannot get away with replicating its DNA and then just saying, okay, you get this half. I think it's a full half, and you get the rest. In other words, it can't give different DNA, different amounts and different types of DNA to the two daughter cells. It has to make sure that it's an exactly perfect division of the two copies of the DNA to the two daughter cells. Otherwise, one cell is going to be shorted some genes, and therefore it will never be able to make those proteins. It won't be able to survive. Right? So mitosis has to be very careful. But when you think about cytokinesis, which is splitting up the cytoplasm, which contains all the other organelles that we talked about, it only has to be roughly equal. I mean, a cell doesn't have to say, okay, you get exactly one half of the endoplasmic reticulum and you get exactly the other half. And that's because anything that's shorted in one cell can be made again, as long as you have all the DNA there, which is the instructions for how to build the stuff in the cell. Okay? But that's the difference between mitosis and cytokinesis, and they both combined make up the M phase. So everything from this second one onward is the M phase, and notice that the last one has cytokinesis in it. But the reason that you see more than one picture here for the M phase is because mitosis is itself then split into five subdivisions or five phases. And those are prophase, prometaphase, metaphase, anaphase, and telophase. Okay? So that's what this picture is detailing. And there is something important happening in each one of these phases. So that's what I want to tell you about. And that's what the cartoons are showing. Now let's think back to G2 of interphase here. Mitosis hasn't started yet, but it's about to start. In the cell are two centrosomes, which are these two things right here with little T's in them. If it's an animal, it has these centrioles in them. But anyway, the centrosomes are microtubule organizing centers. And they need to be separated from each other. They need to go to opposite ends of the cell. And so that's one of the things that happens in the first stage of mitosis, which is prophase. Notice that these two centrosomes are moving away from each other. In other words, they're becoming polarized. They're going to opposite poles. And the reason that they're able to move apart is because growing from each centrosome are microtubules, which are proteins that are like tiny little hollow tubes. These microtubules are not only growing out from each centrosome, but they're pushing on each other, so that pushes the two centrosomes apart. Okay? That's one thing that happens in prophase. The other is happening in the nucleus. The centrosomes are outside of the nucleus. But inside the nucleus, notice that the chromatin that you didn't see any detail in G2 is becoming condensed. So now you actually do see individual chromosomes. But these chromosomes aren't as condensed as they're going to be yet. They're still in the process of becoming condensed. All right, but at this point, those are the two major things that happen in prophase. At this point, when it's still prophase, the membrane around the nucleus, which is called the nuclear envelope, is still intact. Okay? Now we'll go to prometaphase, the next stage. And the reason that these microtubules are growing from these centrosomes is because these microtubules need to connect to the replicated chromosomes that are in the nucleus. Well, the microtubules are outside of the nucleus, the chromosomes are inside the nucleus. In other words, the nuclear envelope is a barrier in the way. So in prometaphase, the nuclear envelope disintegrates so that these microtubules can connect to the chromosomes. And by the way, the collection of structures consisting of both centrosomes and all of the microtubules that are connected to those centrosomes, which has this overall shape, that's called the mitotic spindle. A spindle is something that is tapered on the ends and wider in the middle. That's why it's called that. So this mitotic spindle has been forming in these first two stages. But now that the nuclear envelope is out of the way, these microtubules can connect to the replicated chromosomes. And by the way, these replicated chromosomes, notice they're much smaller than they were in prophase because they're continuing to condense. They're getting more and more tightly coiled up. So now we're starting to see chromosomes that look like the black and white picture in the previous slide. Remember, these are replicated chromosomes because we've already been through S phase. Has to be enough DNA for two cells. And so each of these individual replicated chromosomes consists of two sister chromatids. Right? One half and one half. And remember that the place that they were connected was called the centromere, right? Well, that centromere, which connects the two sister chromatids together, is also the place where these microtubules connect. So you see that on each one of these replicated chromosomes. Each one has a centromere that's being connected with one of those microtubules from the centrosomes. Okay, that's the two major things that happen in prometaphase. Further condensing of the chromosomes, well, I guess three things. Further condensing of the chromosomes, elimination of the nuclear envelope, and connection between microtubules and centromeres. Now we have metaphase. And metaphase has the most condensed chromosomes that you're ever going to see. In other words, they don't get any smaller than they are when they're at metaphase, which is why when scientists really want to look at individual chromosomes, they find cells that are in metaphase so that they're as compact as possible. They can tell them apart from each other. So that's one of the features of metaphase. By then, the condensing of the chromosomes is maximal. But the thing that really defines it as metaphase is that all of these replicated chromosomes are lined up halfway between the two poles. And that's because they are being moved by these microtubules that are connected to them. So they're moving them one way or the other, depending on where they are to begin with, to get them all halfway between. And that place, which is really a two-dimensional plane when this whole cell is three-dimensional, that's called the metaphase plate. It's not actually a structure, it's just a mathematical plane halfway between the two poles. Like a plane that would go through the equator on a globe of the Earth. All right, that's metaphase. Anaphase is an important step that happens next because that's when the chromatids actually separate from each other. Okay, and remember, the two sister chromatids that make up one replicated chromosome are identical to each other, which makes sense because one of those cells, one of the daughter cells, is going to get one copy and the other one's going to get the other copy. That's happening during anaphase. The two sister chromatids split apart, and as soon as they split apart, we actually no longer call them chromatids anymore. Now that they're on their own, we call them chromosomes. It's just that now they are not replicated chromosomes. Each chromosome just has one copy of the DNA now, enough for one cell. So they split apart, and the chromosomes are now headed toward one centrosome or the other, depending on which end of the cell you look at. That's anaphase. And then the last stage of mitosis is telophase. And in telophase, what happens is that these chromosomes that are moving apart from each other reach the ends, reach the centrosomes. And therefore, the collection of chromosomes that reach one centrosome, I mean one centrosome, that collection of chromosomes becomes a new nucleus. The other one becomes a new nucleus on the other end of the cell. And notice that already, even though that this isn't completely yet two cells, already these chromosomes are starting to unwind, become less condensed, so they can start being used again. That's why they're not as small as they were here. Okay, so that is mitosis. Remember, mitosis is just the division of the nucleus. But also shown in this same last picture is cytokinesis. And cytokinesis and telophase overlap each other in time. In other words, the cell doesn't wait until telophase is over, and therefore mitosis is over, before it starts cytokinesis. It starts cytokinesis during this last phase of mitosis, telophase. But the part of this picture that is cytokinesis has nothing to do with the nucleus. It is the splitting of the overall cell into two new cells. It's the splitting of the cytoplasm. So what you see happening in an animal cell, this is an animal cell that we're seeing this in, is the formation of this little ditch all the way around, which is called a cleavage furrow. Cleavage refers to splitting, right? To cleave is to split. So a cleavage furrow develops and gets deeper and deeper until the two cells actually pinch off from each other. And now each daughter cell has its own nucleus with a full set of chromosomes. It's just that those chromosomes now are no longer replicated, which makes sense for just one cell. That means each daughter cell now is going to enter its own G1 phase its own lifetime. And then once it gets old enough, each of those two daughter cells will enter S phase, replicate their own DNA, and split into two new cells each for a total of 4, and then 8 and 16 and so on. Okay, that's mitosis. So any questions on these? I think that's the last slide I want to talk about. Yes, it is. I have just a couple more things to say before you look at the scopes, but I'll wait until after we take a break and get the scopes out. So, 5 minutes.